welcome to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino, and as you might have guessed, this is my home show. We are brought to you by our good friends over at Accurate Mortgage. If you're looking to refinance or purchase a home, they'll get you closed and back to life. So give them a shout at accuratemtg.com. This is going to be a great show. We got, of course, as usual, my cohort in crime here. We got Steve Kenny, processor extraordinaire. We're going to be talking a little bit about appraisals today. We're going to have Bobby Swank in a little bit later on, who's going to kind of guide us through the ins and outs of the appraisal process, why it's important, and why we can't do some of the things with it we think we should be able to do with an appraisal. And then we're going to talk a little bit about recasting mortgages, which is something that, you know, most people probably aren't even aware of. Like, what the heck is that? Well, we're going to tell you what the heck that is and if that might be something that you might be able to do with your mortgage. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about setting up your very first smart home system. You know, there's so many choices out there. Back in the day, you know, not too very long ago, actually, you had to have quite a bit of coin. And some know-how to put a smart home system together, or you had to hire out with a company that came in and put it all in for you. Well, not anymore. Things have gotten a lot more consumer-friendly, a lot more wallet-friendly, and you can kind of piecemeal things together by picking this product and that product. And, you know, the challenge is, of course, do they work together?
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny you say about how much cheaper it's gotten to have some form of home automation. I remember, you remember the show MTV Cribs way back in the day?
Yeah.
So every time they would show it, they would have the person who could like move the blinds and turn the lights on and do all that cool stuff.
Right.
I feel like every time they mention it, they would always say it costs $10,000 or $15,000.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money to spend on something like that.
Yeah. It's a lot of money just to say, you know, lights turn on. That was $20,000 right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had to carry around like a little tablet type thing for every room in the house. And it just, I don't know, it was kind of crazy. So I'm excited with some of the cool stuff they're coming out with now.
Yeah. I mean, so everybody's familiar with the big players. You got Amazon, they've got their whole Echo ecosystem. They've got a gajillion products in there now and more coming out all the time. Google, not too far behind them. They've got their little home speaker and they've got a few different versions of that. Not as many things in their ecosystem as Amazon. Amazon has really just kind of gone nuts with it. They've gone to town.
Yeah, and you know, one of the crazy things too is that not all of them are interchangeable. You know, not all the products are interchangeable. So if you've got certain ones that you've already bought, you know, like a Nest thermostat, I think only works with Google Home. I don't think it works with Amazon Echo, for example.
Yeah, because Google owns Nest.
Right.
So they kind of see to it that happens, you know, that competition thing. And then, of course, let's not forget Apple. I'm a Mac guy myself. I'm an Apple guy. So I got a house full of Apple products, and I'm kind of disappointed that Apple hasn't made a further inroad into the whole smart home scenario, because they've got Apple HomeKit, and the only smart speaker that they've come out with so far has been the HomePod, which is like $300. I mean, it sounds great and all. It's a beautiful sounding speaker, but most people can't afford to put one of those in every room of the house.
Yeah, no way.
You know, yeah, especially for the kids or something. You're just not going to do it.
You know?
So, and then their products have to be HomeKit compatible. Apple has their own specification for how that whole process should work and how machines and things talk to each other. And not every company goes through that process. So they just do Google and Amazon and stuff. So,
yeah.
So it's getting a little better, and hopefully Apple will come out with, you know, like the equivalent of the Amazon Echo. You know, we're on sale. You can get the little Echo Dots for like $20.
Are they really that cheap now?
You know, they're normally about $40, but every once in a while they put them on sale. I've bought a few of them for like $20-$25. And so I do have a few of them in the house.
Yeah.
Because they're so cheap. You know, I would buy a couple of them. Yeah, there's one in the kids' room, and because they work as a great intercom too. So you can say, come down to dinner when they're up at the other end of the house, you know.
That's funny, like a 21st century intercom. Exactly. No more pushing buttons and doing all
No. So yeah, basically, you got to make sure that they all work together.
Well, yeah. So we're actually an Apple household too. So me and my wife both have iPhones. We've got a couple of iPads sitting around, things like that. But when we kind of dipped our toe in the water, I guess is probably a good way to put it. We ended up getting a Google Home as opposed to Amazon Echo, or actually, I don't even think the other one, I don't think the Apple version was out when we bought ours.
Right, the HomePod.
So the reason we did that was because we already had Nest. Like, yeah, we've had Nest for a few years. So we wanted to buy one that integrated with our thermostat so that we could try and do it together.
Yeah.
So now we've got a smart lock, and the smart lock doesn't integrate with the Google Home.
Mm-hmm.
But Google Home and Nest work together great. So we really need kind of like a one solution that really integrates with everything.
I think they're slowly coming around. Apple is coming around as well with the HomeKit stuff. I bought the Echo Bee for the thermostat mainly because it was HomeKit compatible.
Yeah.
And you could talk to Siri to get things done. It's now, like, hey, Siri, turn the temperature down to 70. And then she says, I'm sorry, I don't see turn the temperature down to 70 in your contact list. You know, that's not what I meant, Siri.
That's funny. That is too funny. Now, Echo Bee is different than Amazon Echo, though, right?
Yes, different company altogether.
Okay, yeah. So similar name, but different.
Yeah, it's Ecobee, like okay. A little bee. That's their little mascot, is a little
yeah.
bee. But one of the cool things that you guess, the first step really is to figure out what you want to do with your smart home. I mean, you're basically looking for convenience. In which case, you know, going with a big player like Amazon or Google or, you know, eventually Apple, that'll be the way to go. But if you're looking for automation, it kind of narrows down the choices a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially if you're looking for, there's a acronym that a lot of people maybe have seen but don't know what it is. It's the IFTTT system, which means if this, then that.
Oh.
And so that's where you can set up automations like if it's nighttime and there's no motion in the house and the alarm is set, randomly turn the lights on and off inside the house, you know, to make it look like we're home.
Wow.
So, you know, you can kind of set those things up, and I'm sure you could think of a million other ones, but not all devices work with that either, you know? So
yeah,
you kind of just have to decide what it is that you want to do in the long run and how geeky you want to get with the whole thing.
I mean, it would be awesome. So if the coffee maker would turn on based on when I set my alarm on my phone. Now, I know that we're quite a few years away from that, but I think that's kind of the
angle. No, not with smart plugs. I mean, because you buy a little smart plug the coffee maker into that, and have it turn on. You'd probably have to get a fairly dumb coffee yeah. maker, you know, one that just switches on and off.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know,
it's not going to refill the pods for
no,
me.
No, it's not going to do that. Yeah, not yet. Maybe okay. maybe next okay. year's model. But really, the best products to kind of get you started is Amazon Echo or Google Home.
And those are more based on like voice commands, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless you set up the if this, then that scenario. For lighting, a good smart light is the Philips Hue, Hue. That's a great system. And it's a little more complicated than some of the other ones, but it's a good one. They're readily available. Every Home Depot, Lowe's, they have those. It's a good way to break into the whole smart lighting thing where you can set the lights based on voice commands. Let's say you say, you know, Alexa, good night. And so at that point, Alexa knows to dim the lights to this level or turn them off and turn off the fireplace if you've got one that works with a switch and set the alarm.
Yeah.
So the Nest thermostat or the Echo Bee is a good way to go for the thermostat. They work with a lot of different systems, all the ones that we've talked about. Then if you get a security camera, like a Nest camera or Ring camera.
Oh, yeah.
I've got SimpliSafe, so that has a camera and a doorbell, so that all works with that. That's HomeKit compatible, so that's great to be able to see what's going on in the house when you're not home.
Yeah.
And the doorbell, you know, the Ring or there's so many out there, but Ring is a good one just because it's so ubiquitous. I mean,
yeah.
It's easy to get. They're inexpensive. Buy it off of Amazon and you got it. You got it right there. It's all set up.
So let me pose a question to you. Mm-hmm. So let's take the lighting thing as an example. So
right.
There's obviously smart light bulbs. So that's really specialized. You can only just buy the light bulb and that's really all it's going to do. Right. So the other option you would have is the smart plugs, right? So you basically, it looks like a little plug and mm-hmm. you just plug it into your outlet and then you plug in whatever appliance or light
yep.
is an example. So
Wemo is a great company that makes great smart plugs, Wemo.
Oh, okay. For just that reason,
be able to plug things that aren't smart into it and have it turn it
yeah.
on and off. Like you could plug your coffee maker into it if you wanted to.
Okay. So if you were going to do that, I guess here's what my question is. So would you buy all those individual specialized things? Like, would you rather buy a light bulb or would you rather just get a bunch of those plugs?
See, what I would do for lights, Lutron makes a great system, the Cassetta system.
Okay.
And it's a smart light switch. So it controls everything that's on that circuit. So the light switch then, it has a dimmer on it and everything. And so you can control those. You don't have to use smart bulbs at that point. You just use regular bulbs.
Okay.
with the smart switch that turns them on and off or dims them. The smart bulbs are going to be more if you want one that changes colors and that kind of thing, you know.
Oh, yeah, I forgot they do that.
You know, you color temperature for different times. You know, they have some that, like, will match the temperature of the sun depending on what time of day it is. Or wow. If or you can have them wake you up in the morning with, like, slowly, like a sunrise in your room, you know, where, like, slowly. Okay. And it's supposed to help with your circadian rhythms and, you know. So you can get crazy with that kind of stuff.
Okay, so that is a little more specialized than I thought.
Yeah, but not that expensive. I mean, Home Depot has a light that does just that for like $12.
Oh, wow.
It's part of their EcoSmart. That's their house brand of LED bulbs and stuff.
Yeah.
And they've got one, a smart bulb that'll do that, that'll kind of wake you up with the light.
Oh, wow.
Gently, you know, changing the temperature as it goes along. So, that, you know, once you've got all that, then you got to put it all together, of course. And you've bought a few devices. You got to string them all together. Sometimes you need what's called a hub. And the Amazon Echo actually acts as a hub. It is the control center that then goes out and controls all the other things.
Okay.
Kind of pulls it all together. Some things don't need a hub. Some things do. For instance, the Cassetta light switches from Lutron, you need to buy their little hub to control all the light switches. And it's like $70 and you plug it into your internet and it just then controls everything.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to cobble it all together. But once you get it going just with the basics, it's a lot of fun. So the only other thing I would throw into that whole mix is a smart lock, because it's a great thing to have.
Yes. Very useful.
You can set a code to help people get in the house that, you know, like a pet sitter or babysitter or something like that. But yeah, that's just a little bit to get you started on the whole smart home thing. If you want to find out more, hit us up at highnosehomeshow.com. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. We're going to let you know about how to recast your mortgage. Exciting, exciting stuff. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. I'm Hino. I'm here with Mr. Steve Kenny, mortgage processor extraordinaire. We got to put that on your business card, I think.
I think we should.
I think we should too. We want to talk a little bit about something that most people probably have never heard of before, and it's got nothing to do with phishing. It's the concept of recasting your mortgage.
Fun.
And most people would be like, what is recasting your mortgage? What would you say to those people, Steve?
So recasting is a little bit different than refinancing. I know those two words are kind of similar.
They both have re in the title.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. A lot of people are familiar with refinancing, but recasting is a little bit different because essentially what you're doing is taking whatever your balance is at a given time.
Yeah.
And then the term recast means to recast over whatever remaining period of time there is on your loan. So if you are, let's say, 10 years into a 30-year loan, if you recast at that 10 years, they're going to take whatever the remaining balance is of your mortgage and then spread that out over the remaining 20 years of your loan.
Right. So to put it in numbers, let's say you started out at $100,000 is how much you owed. And let's say a few years in, you're now down to 80. And so now, but the original loan payment was based on that $100,000.
Right.
So now the new loan payment will be based on the 80, which is what you currently have a balance of.
Right.
Okay. So that's kind of what recasting is. So it's not quite refinancing. You're not changing lenders.
Right.
You're staying with the same lender. Can you just do this out of the blue, or what are the scenarios in which you would even think of doing this?
So you've heard the old saying, it takes money to make money.
Yes.
So it's always going to cost you something to do anything related to your mortgage. So recasting does have a fee. It's a lot less than if you were going to refinance. You know, typically refinancing, it's going to cost about as much as if you were going to buy a house. You know, it's kind of similar in that regard, a couple thousand dollars. With recast, it's really only going to cost you a couple hundred. Most companies charge anywhere from like $150 to $400. And one of the cool things is, too, you don't have to go through the normal process.
So there's no income verification
or
credit check and all that good stuff.
Right, because you've already agreed to the terms with your lender. So you're going to stay with your lender. You're going to make the same payments or make the payments to the same company, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is going to be now, if your balance is different than what it was expected to be at that given time, that's how your payment's going to change. So
yeah,
you could recast at any time in theory. And I'm sure there are probably companies out there who would just take your money and say, okay, you know, here's your recast. Well, the only way that it makes sense is if one of two situations. So one situation, and this is probably the most common reason that people recast their mortgage, is if they all of a sudden come into a lump sum of money.
Right.
So let's say, you know, rich uncle dies and he gives you some money, but it's not enough to pay off the mortgage. Well, if you owe, you know, $300,000 on your mortgage and you get a $40,000 inheritance and you decide, okay, I'm going to put that $40,000 towards the house. I want it to be safe, you know, somewhere I'm not just going to blow it. Right. So if you recast and bring that $40,000, put that towards the mortgage, now your mortgage is only going to be $260,000, right? So if you've only been in the mortgage for 3 or 4 years and you've got, you know, what is that, 26 years left to pay on it, your payment's going to come down a couple hundred dollars because now it's based on the $260,000 as opposed to the $300,000 or maybe the $295,000 that you were at a couple years into it.
Right. And I recently had somebody who, this is another reason why you would want to do it. They were selling a house, but at the same time, they already found a new house that they really, really wanted to buy, and they had to move fast because it was in a very desirable neighborhood. So they went ahead and bought that new house, even though their old one hadn't sold yet. So they obviously didn't have the big down payment ready because their other house hasn't sold yet. That's where they were going to get the down payment from.
Okay.
So they bought the house, and then within a couple of months, they were able to sell their house. And so now they had this big lump sum from the proceeds of that. So now they were able to go back and recast the new mortgage basically as if they had had that down payment to begin with. So, it cost them a few hundred dollars in fees to do, but they were now able to put the 20% down or whatever it was. And now their mortgage payment is based on that new lower loan amount. Everybody's happy.
Yep. That's a perfect example. And actually, I think that's probably the one that I personally have seen the most is that situation right there where people are trying to buy and sell a house at the same time and the timing's just not working right. So this is a good option to get into the new house and still be able to sell your old one on that timeline.
Right. So what would you say, when is, in general, when is it worth it to do a recast?
I would say it's probably worth it if you've paid down your balance about $30,000.
Okay. So I think that's if you come to the table with an additional $30,000, so does it only ever work if you've got a lump sum to put towards your mortgage?
Good question. So that's actually the second way that we see people where it can benefit them to recast, not refinance, but recast.
Yeah.
So let's say that, you know, you get your mortgage and your mortgage payment is $1,500.
Right.
Well, you want to be diligent and try and pay less interest over the life of your loan. So you start paying an extra $300 or $400 towards your loan every month, right?
Right. And so anything over and above the minimum payment goes towards your principal and is slowly knocking that down.
Exactly. So if you were just to continue to do that, to make extra mortgage payments every month, you know, not necessarily a full payment, but anything over and above what your minimum requirement is, what's going to happen is as you pay your balance down, you're going to move further forward in your amortization schedule. So basically, a simple way to look at it is if you're on a 30-year mortgage, and you start making extra payments, well, if you make the equivalent of an extra payment a year, now you're only going to pay it over 22 years, right?
Okay.
So if you're doing that, you know, things are going really well, you've got your finances in order, so we're making these extra payments, and then all of a sudden something happens. You know, let's say maybe you have a kid, or, you know, maybe, gosh forbid, someone has an illness, and they're not going to work for 6 months. Well, you can look at your situation and say, hey, you know what? We need to be a little bit more conservative the way that we're paying our bills right now. Let's see if we can recast and take advantage of that extra money that we've been putting towards the mortgage. So that way we can lower our monthly payment a couple of $100 because we've been, you know, really good savers and trying to pay off the mortgage.
So when is it a bad idea? I mean, I would imagine that if you've got like a really good rate and you don't want to mess with that, that's a good reason to recast rather than refinance.
Yes.
But what would be a bad reason to do it?
You know, a bad reason to do it would be if you've just been making your minimum mortgage payment, you're not going to get any benefit out of it. So if you, let's say in theory that you were just making your minimum mortgage payment and you called up your mortgage company and said, hey, you know, I heard about this thing on the radio. I want to look at recasting my mortgage.
Right.
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to pull up your amortization schedule and they're going to look at what your existing balance is right now. Mm-hmm. And they're going to run probably called a net tangible benefit. You know, that's another term that we use in the mortgage industry, just to look and make sure that it's actually going
to
benefit
you. That it's actually worth it for you to go through the trouble.
Right. Right. So they're going to look at it and say, well, you've only been making your minimum payment, so, you know, it's not going to change your payment. I mean, if your payment goes down a dollar, is that really worth it? Probably not. You know, it's not worth $150.
Right. That's true. So basically the alternatives to doing a recast would be to just do the traditional refinance.
Right.
You know, and that would make sense if rates are lower now than when you first took out your mortgage, then it would make sense to do that rather than a recast, because, you know, you're basically keeping the rest of the terms the same when you recast.
Yes.
Your mortgage payments, or excuse me, rate stays the same. None of that changes. It's just based on a lower amount. So in that case, it might be worth refinancing, and it probably costs you less too, because you don't have to come to the table with a big chunk of money.
Right.
Either over time, like you did if you were the smart guy, like you were saying, you know, paying a little bit extra every month, or coming to the table with a big chunk, like if you just sold another property, or if you got a rich uncle who died, who, you know, hopefully that didn't happen, but, you know, people do come into money. You won the lottery or something. Something happened where you get some money.
Or you get a big bonus at work, you know?
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that, a big bonus at work. So basically that is the concept of recasting your loan. Hopefully that didn't confuse you too much, but it's definitely worth doing, especially if you're in a situation where you're trying to buy and sell a house and the timing's just not working out. You know you're going to have that extra big chunk of money as soon as that house sells, but you really need to move on this new house because otherwise it's going to get away.
Yeah.
If you can swing it, that might be a way to go. And most time, lenders will only require that you will have made at least 6 payments on the loan.
Right.
And then there's usually a nominal fee of a few hundred dollars to you know, just do the paperwork and everything. But aside from that, it's a totally doable situation. So
yeah. And here's what I would tell people listening too. If you have a question about a particular scenario, call and ask us.
You know,
maybe it's something that other listeners are having questions about too.
Absolutely. You can, and just on that note, you can always reach out to us at heinoshomeshow.com. There's a place there to send us a message, send us an email or anything like that. And we'll be happy to answer a question. You can even schedule an appointment with us right there on the website. Can't promise that we'll be as snappily dressed as we are now, but but listen, we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Heino's Home Show. We're going to talk appraisals here in just a second. We got Bobby Swank from a big appraisal company called Clearview Valuations, so you're going to want to check that out. We'll be back here in just a second. All right, welcome back to Heino's Home Show. Brought to you, as always, by our good friends over at Accurate Mortgage. They'll get you closed and back to life. So home appraisals are one of those things that is an important part of any home purchase or refinance transaction. And that, you know, the appraisal determines the value of the house. So that's really important. And since it's such a big part of the process, we thought we'd try to demystify it for you a little bit today. So helping us do that today is Mr. Bobby Swank, president of Clearview Valuations. They're an appraisal management company. Bobby Swank, welcome to Heino's Home Show.
Hi, thank you, Heino. Thanks for letting me be here.
Oh, awesome. So how long have you been doing the appraisal game?
I've been doing it since about 1987, when I graduated from Auburn University in 87. Now I am been president of Clearview for about a year now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So you know appraisals. So one of the things that, you know, somebody like me can't just call up an appraiser directly and say, hey, I'd like you to do an appraisal for me. You know, we used to be able to do that, but
right.
But now we got to go through what's called an appraisal management company, of which you are a president of. So
correct.
What is an appraisal management company and why do we have them?
We have them based on back in 2010 on the Dodd-Frank Act.
Yep.
And it's required that any transaction on that's going to be sold in the Freddie and Fannie market go through a third party.
Okay.
So basically now all lenders have to go through a third party to order that appraisal work so that they're out of the transaction.
Yeah. I mean, legally, I can't even know the appraiser's name until the thing is done.
That is correct.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's can't call them up. I don't have any idea who it is.
That's right. We're that buffer of independence between the lender and the appraiser. That is
okay.
Correct.
Well, one of the questions that I get all the time especially from home buyers and people refinancing is why can't I just pick my own appraiser? Why do I have to use your guy?
Well, as far as a lender goes, and again, it if the loan is being, or the transaction is on the open market, the FHA, Freddie or Fannie Mac, you are going to have to go through a third party. That's just based on the rules now since 2010.
Yeah. So these are federal guidelines that we all have to follow.
All lender. Now, there are differences. If you're a lender, I don't know how many of those still do it, where you portfolio your own loans and you're not actually selling them on the open market, then you could actually use an appraiser directly if you're
right.
portfolio.
You don't have to follow Fannie Mae's guidelines exactly. if you're not dealing with them.
You don't see too many lenders like that anymore.
Yeah, they're pretty rare.
Pretty rare. Very rare, actually.
Well, one of the questions I get all the time is, what does an appraiser do? Like when you're going out to appraise a house, what are you doing exactly?
Well, a lot of people get appraisers and home inspectors confused. It's an easy confusion. It's an easy way to look at it. But the appraiser mainly is basing his value, basing his scope of work. He is basing everything on what we call the sales comparison approach. If it's not an income deal, it's just your normal single family, someone's buying a house or refinancing or whatever. The appraiser goes out, knows the scope of work, what kind of house is he appraising. He's then going to compare it to other sales that are similar in the neighborhood. If it's not in a neighborhood itself, say it's not on a state road or something like that, then he's going to try to find similar sales on main roads like that as well to compare those to.
Okay. So you mentioned the home inspector. They get confused a lot.
They do.
Especially by the general public. So what is the difference between an appraiser and an inspector? And is there any overlap? Because sometimes an appraiser calls out things in an appraisal, hey, this is not working or that's not working.
Right.
And you would think that, that's the inspector's job, right? So tell us the difference there.
Well, and it really depends on the transaction. If it's FHA, an appraiser has to do a little bit more work, kind of like an inspector, and I'll explain that in a minute, but if it's an FHA, he's going to have to go up in the attic, if there's an attic, and take a photo of the attic, make sure there's no damage, leaks, or anything like that, rodents, any bad thing that could be health-wise up in the attic. Crawl space, same thing.
If serial killers.
Yeah, just snakes in the crawl space. Yeah. Anything they're good. Yeah, you see that a lot in Florida probably, but basically it's just, he's going out, and anything he sees that would affect the marketability of the subject, he is supposed to comment on it. It may not affect the loan at all. If it's FHA, there's certain things that have to be done, and we could go over that if you want later, but there's many items in an FHA appraisal, whereas if it's a conventional loan, the appraiser doesn't have to follow the same guidelines. There can be chipping paint, on a conventional loan, whatever, where there can't be on FHA. Mm-hmm. But whatever the appraiser sees, no matter what, even if it doesn't affect FHA, if there's something wrong, the appraiser is supposed to mention it on the report. But the difference is say the appraiser notices a stucco wall coming off the wall, okay? Mm-hmm. All he can really tell you is, hey, the stucco's coming off the wall. I don't know anything about stucco walls and how they're supposed to be, but I can tell you this is wrong and it needs to be corrected.
Paint's peeling, whatever it might be.
There could be something behind the wall that's causing the stucco to come off. The appraiser really all he has to do is mention it, and then, again, it would be up to the lender whoever, to go maybe to an inspector, let the inspector go behind that stucco with whatever they do with their poking in walls and everything, and to tell you what's behind there and the reason actually why that's happening.
Okay. I find kind of funny sometimes is that people, when you tell them that you're going to do an appraisal, they kind of get freaked out. They're like, wait, I need a week to clean my house first. So how important is having a clean house, and do you care if the walls are purple or the carpet is ugly? I mean, do you care about any of that?
Okay, and that really depends on when you say if it's been upgraded and renovated, it's just a bad choice that the buyer picked for colors and stuff. If it's something like that, as long as it's updated, it's new, it's still going to get the same look at as your comparables that have been updated with maybe nicer colors or whatever. Right. I would say that's not a negative, but the house not being clean or something like that, is it a negative? It's not as far as an appraiser looks at value, but how I look at that is, and this is how I live my life, is that if I was an appraiser and I was doing a house and it was just really messy and I couldn't see things behind it or whatever, if there was a certain range, it would, a value that I'm like, well, I'm not really sure if it's, on the higher end because of this or the lower end of this, I may mentally, not mean to, but mentally go to a lower range type value because of the house was so messy. I'm thinking, you know, it's mentally making me do that.
Well, you
shouldn't, but I'm just saying a lot of appraisers, it may mentally make them think that way.
You bring up a good point because it seems like appraisals are as much art as they are science. So true. It's not, you mean, if you get, I'm guessing that if you get five appraisers to go out and appraise the same property, you might come up with five different values.
You'll probably come up with five different values, and you'll probably come up, unless it's a square house, you'll probably come up with five different GLAs that might be 2 feet.
What's a GLA?
Gross living area. So in other words, you think your house is 2,500 square feet. You go five appraisers either if it's not square and everything, you know, there's a open foyer or something like that.
Right, right.
You're probably going to get different GLAs. They're all going to be within a certain, 5%, 3% more than likely. And then, so it's okay. But I'm just saying, yes, if you sent five different appraisers out there, you're probably going to get five different values. Again, all very close to each other, but you're not going to get the same value.
Yeah, because there's some opinion in there.
There is.
Yeah, okay.
There is. And that's maybe where you're talking about a house not being, it shouldn't, but mentally in that appraiser's mind, it might be why that's on that lower value range. Because
there's dirty socks everywhere.
Right, yeah. It'd have to be more than dirty socks, but okay. Yeah, you know what I'm talking
okay,
about.
Okay, yeah. So you mentioned that the appraiser might call out something that needs to be repaired or something that doesn't look right, and that would fall under the category of a subject to appraisal,
that
right?
That is correct.
So what? Tell us, what is a subject to appraisal?
Well, it depends, and again, it depends on, I'm sure you guys offer, FHA 203K loans, mm-hmm. and just yep. like you do conventional.
Yep.
There's different subject to items on a conventional loan. If it's just conventional, most of your really the only subject to items are going to be or anything if it's a purchase, anything in the contract that's supposed to be done before you close on it.
Okay.
And any really safety item, chip paint, no. Torn carpet, no, something like that. I mean, it's not going to affect anything on a conventional loan. The appraiser might mention it in the report, and if the lender wants right. to get that fixed, that would be up to their choice, but they wouldn't have
or to. Let's say that the family was replacing a toilet.
Okay.
And the day the appraiser came out, the toilet was not there.
Right.
But the new one's sitting in a box over there. So you might say, okay, subject to the toilet being installed.
Right. Right.
The house is worth X, Y, and Z.
That's correct. And what that means is they're already counting it in the appraisal. And when you look at the comps and the adjustments or whatever, when your borrower's looking at it, they're counting that already being installed. And so, in other words, it's everything subject to whatever those items are. That value is subject to those items being in place.
So, Bobby, I've had a couple situations where somebody was wanting to refinance a house. And they had a home-based business. Okay. This one particular guy had an outbuilding in the back, okay. A garage set up, and he was a cabinet maker. He worked
sure.
in the back, and he built cabinetry.
Sure.
But it was zoned residential.
Okay.
Is that a problem? And what happens on the appraisal side of things when you go out to appraise it?
That is going to be that's going to be a zoning issue. If just because it's zoned residential does not mean he can't have a home-based business.
Okay.
Out of your house. That's going to be a zoning question for your planning or zoning in that county.
Okay.
If it's a no zoning, it's not an issue. If you okay. don't have any zoning at all, it's not an issue at all.
What if there's a sign? Because I've heard that if there's no sign, if let's say I sell, because I've had a loan be turned down by the underwriters in the past because the person sold eggs and they had a sign out front that said fresh eggs, for sale.
Right.
And they said, well, that's commercial and we can't do this loan. I'm like, but it's not commercial.
It's not, and again, how much? A lot of lenders will ask, "What's the income percentage that comes out?" And when they find out it's $10 a week selling eggs on the street,
yeah,
it's not a commercial business,
right? If the appraiser goes out there and there's a sign for I don't know,
refurnishing furniture,
or let's say I cut hair and okay. I've got a little hair salon sign in my front yard, and people come into my living room and I cut their hair.
Most. And again, this depends on the zoning, but
right.
most in my lustrous career of doing all this and looking at, literally 150,000 reports in the last 10 years. And that's,
right.
I'm not lying when I say that. I've probably looked at more, actually.
But, okay.
But with that being said, every time I've seen that, most of the time it comes down to the county. As long as it's a home-based business, something like a haircut, something like that, to where they're not bringing in selling items,
foot traffic,
retail sales, yeah. exactly, where they're selling something, paying taxes on it, selling cars, selling whatever it is, and they have a sign in the yard, and it's actually a business more than it is a residence.
All right. Well, that's pretty awesome. Well, listen, we got to take a quick break. You got time to stick around for one more segment?
Oh, I'd love to stick around.
All right. We're going to be back with a whole lot more appraisal talk with Bobby Swank of Clearview Valuations right here on Hino's Home Show. So come on back. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We are talking appraisals right now, and I've got Mr. Bobby Swank, president of Clearview Valuations. So, Bobby, what are some of the things that a homeowner can do to improve their chances at getting a good appraisal, the number that they're looking for?
Whether it's a sales or whether it's a refinance, doesn't really matter. If it's a purchase, of course, most of the time when you're going out the house, if it's new construction, you know, you're going to have everything in the contract, what you want. And it's a pretty easy deal. If it's a refinance, well, I mean, again, keeping the house clean, making sure that, and again, it depends on what kind of loan the person's getting. If it's FHA and you're the owner of the house and you know, hey, there's chip and paint and everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might want to, you know, if you're refinancing, you're going FHA, you're going to have to fix some of that. Your gutters can't be hanging off the side of the house. Everything needs to be working or the outlets need to be right. I mean, there's a lot of things that go in with FHA. If it's conventional, it's a matter of just cosmetic, making the house look nice, you know,
and yeah,
doing whatever it is that your neighbors have done in the houses that have been sold around you. That's about the best way to look at it.
Do you ever have people call you up and do an appraisal just to find out what their house is worth?
Yes.
so that they can fix things? Or?
Oh, yeah. And that's another way. A borrower can call any appraiser that he wants to and have, you know, pay the appraiser to come do his services.
Since it's not for a loan, you can do it. Yeah.
And let's clarify that so that anybody listening, if you are going to get a loan, then it's still a good idea. I mean, if you want to get a personal appraisal done, that's fine, but you won't be able to use that appraisal when you go get a loan. It has to be ordered by a third party. So, yes, it'll give you a good idea of maybe what you want to sell your house, maybe what you need to put into it,
mm-hmm.
but you won't be able to use that appraisal. You'll have to pay for another appraisal or whatever how that works.
Yeah.
You will have to get another appraisal done through a third party.
Okay. So how much do appraisers pay attention in the context of a sale?
Okay.
How much do they pay attention to the contract price? So the buyer and the seller have agreed on $300,000, for example, for this house.
Okay.
And so as part of the process, that contract gets sent to the appraiser, so they know that this house has just got sold for $300,000. So how much do they pay attention to that when they're figuring out what the house's value is?
Well, every good appraiser out there should tell you that we don't appraise the contract price just because somebody listed it for it and someone agreed to it. Although, in theory, that makes a lot of sense. Somebody listed it.
Yeah.
Somebody wanted it enough to pay for it.
Generally speaking, things are worth what people are willing to pay for.
That's exactly right.
Now, yeah.
I'm going to give you an example that where sometimes it's very hard, and hopefully realtors that are listening to this will understand this along with appraisers. But, you know, you're in a market. For instance, I was trying to help my daughter with a house in Jupiter, Florida.
Okay.
About a month and a half ago.
All right.
The house that we actually put an offer on had five offers behind it.
Ooh.
It was full price. They wouldn't pay any seller closing costs or anything.
Okay.
And in that kind of market, it really is one of those things where if someone's offering more money and there haven't been any more sales in there to support that, in other words, it just went up for sale there for some reason.
There's a little bit of a bidding war going on.
There's a bidding war. The agent knows it's a popular house, whatever, and there's four deals behind it for more. Then that's a hard circumstance for an appraiser because he may not have the sales have caught up to that house yet. They're close, but they haven't caught up to that sales price house. If it were to sell for that, it may be hard for an appraiser to find comps that get it to that value.
Okay.
Because it just hasn't made it yet, though. You're right there on the brink for that instance was what I'm talking about.
So in that case, they might pay attention to at least a little bit to the contract price?
They always pay attention to the sales price. They just try not to appraise it to the sales price. They're going off of other comparables. And again, you know, sometimes agents list houses wrong.
Maybe
they're new or whatever, and they listed it based on comparables that were a little bit farther away and didn't see some other ones that were closer that the appraiser may have to use.
Right.
Another classic example, And I think this is good for your listeners to know is that realtors and people can sell their houses and say whatever they want to about them. In other words, if they have a ranch with a basement that's finished,
right,
and there's three bedrooms in the basement and there's three upstairs, realtor can sell it as a six bedroom, three bath house if there's two bathrooms upstairs, one downstairs in the basement.
Okay.
The appraiser cannot.
Why?
Appraiser has to follow certain rules that agents and the borrowers don't have to. It's basically anything below foyer is considered basement. It can't be considered in the overall room count. And that's why you see on an appraisal form, it's a three-bedroom, two-bath house with a finished basement with three bedrooms and two baths down in the finished basement. That's why you don't ever see it added together in the
It's just because it's below ground?
That's below grade, yes.
What if it's one of those houses that's like on the side of a hill and you can walk in from the backyard, for example, you can walk into the basement area. So it's not really underground, but it is the bottom floor.
It really depends on what appraisers are doing in that market. Like, example, if you're in the mountain market and your house is built, you know, it's all houses built in the mountains. It's a subdivision in the mountains.
They're all like that, yeah.
They're all like that. All the kitchens are on the basement level. Everything's below ground. You may have your master bedroom on the first floor, but your whole living area and kitchens, everything below ground. It's below ground. But because that's common for that area and every appraiser lists that information in all the databases where other appraisers okay. get that information to use for their appraisals, as long as it's consistent, then it's okay.
Okay.
But
so it's really a matter of how common it is in the area.
It really is. It's hard. Anything below ground really truly is supposed to be considered basement. But in that area, it could be in Tennessee. It could be in Florida where there are no mountains. If it's consistent and the appraisers in that market are consistent with what they're doing and how they're listing it, then every other appraiser uses that information those databases, and that's so it stays consistent.
Okay.
Like that, if that makes sense.
All right. So let's say you have an appraisal that comes back below the purchase price. So let's say $300,000 and the appraisal comes back at $280,000 or something crazy like that.
Right.
How do you go about contesting that? Or can you?
Yes, you can. There's a process for that, and it's an easy process, but there is a process for it, and you do need to follow the process.
Okay.
Just to make sure you're doing it the correct way. Now, and again, a lot of times, if you're talking about that much of a difference, then the reviewer, whoever's reviewing that file, that appraisal or whatever, is probably going to look into it a little bit harder just to make sure, you know, why are we off that much?
If
someone's listing it for this much, where did they get that information? What am I missing? So as an appraiser, I'm going to call that agent. I'm going to find out how you listed that. Tell me what comps you used. Any information I can get to get some help. So that's kind of how we look at it. But if it comes below, there is a process, like we said. Basically, the borrower or the agent, whoever's involved. Sorry about my kind of breathing a little heavy today, but basically, what happens is when that comes under value is that there's a process. The borrower or the agent will fill out a form, which any lender will have or AMC will have, whatever they're using. The agent and the borrower can fill that out. What's wrong with the appraisal? Okay, we found, you know, he said there's two fireplaces, there's three. Those things like that would be corrected automatically. We would go back to the appraiser and have those corrected.
Sure.
And then what you would do, what the borrower would do and the agent would do, would be to give a list of addresses that maybe they found why they listed it for this, and we would approach that to the appraiser, give that back to the appraiser for him to review those addresses.
It's like, yeah, you didn't compare it to this house and this house, which sold for a lot more than what you're saying.
And this is how we listed it at this price using these. And we would go back to the appraiser, and we make him comment in the report. If he uses them and changes the value, fine. You know, we make him comment in the report that that's what happened.
Yeah.
If he doesn't use them, then we make him comment in the report why he did not use those sales so that everybody knows why.
I would imagine that a little bit of human nature comes into play because you're basically calling up somebody and saying, hey, you're wrong.
True.
And so, you know, I would imagine that a lot of people, you know, their first response would be, nuh-uh, I was not wrong, you know. So because basically you're asking the same appraiser to go back and reconsider what they said in the first place.
Correct.
So there's a little bit of
there is
and art in how you present the facts back to them.
Well, and here's how successful, just to give you an example, is reconsideration of value. If you send me as a loan officer and you send me addresses and you send me five of them to send to the appraiser because that's what the agent sent you.
Yeah.
And three of the five are already in the report.
that doesn't help.
If I'm an appraiser, I'm going to say, you didn't even look at the, you didn't take this seriously. Why should I look at these and take it seriously? Yeah. That's how I would look at it. I mean, because three of the five you gave me are already in the report.
Right.
So, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So we, as an AMC and reviewers, we try to not send that to appraiser. We try to send them the pertinent information and try to weed that out if that happens.
All right. Well, we got about a minute left. What do you think is coming in your industry? What's going to be the future? Because we're seeing a lot more property inspection waivers come through Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. So that what that means is that when we do the preliminary approval for a loan, sometimes they say, hey, we like the value that you gave us. You don't have to do an appraisal.
Right.
So that seems to be happening more and more. So what do you see the future of this whole business?
Well, I hope it doesn't, because it'll put a lot of people out of business.
Well, you in particular. Yeah, that would stink, right?
And we've been saying that for about 35 years, ever since I've been in the business, that, you know, oh, I bet in 5 years they're not even going to need appraisers or whatever. But it hasn't happened. I believe that with technology, there's going to be things that they can do. Mm. Freddie and Fannie right now have every bit of information on every appraisal done in this country,
right,
stored in a database. So right. Everybody thought 20 years ago that you wouldn't need an appraisal, but I believe you need somebody to go to the house. I think appraisers are still going to be around for a long time. That's how I look at it.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Bobby Swank, president of Clearview Valuations. Thanks so much for being on the show with us today. Hey, we've had a great time with you. Check us out at hinoshomeshow.com. We'd love to hear from you. If there's something that we haven't talked about on the show that you'd like us to talk about, give us a shout.
Thanks,
we'll see you next week on Hino's Home Show.
Enjoyed it.